Members of the panel, good morning.
All right, well, let's get down to the serious business of this case, Mr. Helft.
Good morning, members of the panel. My name is Christopher Helft, and I represent the petitioner, Mr. Syed Ali, in this petition for review. And may it please the court. We challenge here two final orders of the BIA, the first one occurring on July 27th of last year, the appeal in chief wherein the board, the BIA, dismissed my client's appeal. And we also challenge the motion to reconsider, which we filed, which was denied shortly thereafter in September 28th, 2006. Now, as the record indicates, Mr. Ali is a 64-year-old male from Pakistan. He lives here in Chicago with his three green card holder sons, all three of which are my clients, and all three of them have now pending applications for U.S. citizenship. The record, of course, doesn't address the two other sons, but, you know, I mentioned that as a bit of a background to show the stability that this individual has, and the fact that the record does indicate that he does live with his family and does live with those three individuals. Mr. Ali was subject to the special registration program, and as this court is well aware, then Attorney General John Ashcroft announced that all individuals from predominantly Muslim countries, males over the ages of 16, voluntarily come in to then INS, be fingerprinted, and photographed. Well, as we also know, and this court is well aware, many, if not most, I would say probably all, were not just quote-unquote fingerprinted and photographed and released. Individuals who had minor visa infractions, individuals who had pending applications for green cards, individuals who were on the fast track to green card status here in the United States were detained. And the word detained is a somewhat unfair semantical term, because we know the word detained in this context really doesn't mean that they were, you know, held, you know, late for dinner. These individuals were arrested, they were shackled, and they were held. Many of them were held without bond. Others, individuals like my client, was not held on bond. He was released and placed in removal proceedings. As a form of relief, we requested of this immigration judge a continuance, and that is what we received. We received a continuance for the reason stated. However, time ran out for this individual, obviously, with this immigration judge. We requested a continuance for the processing of the son's citizenship application.
What's the status of that today?
Your Honor, he was interviewed on December 21st, 2005. And they have not made a decision. CIS has not made a decision. They have not denied the case. They have not approved the case. And they have not responded to two inquiries that I have made. And I would be happy to file my inquiries. In fact, I think it would behoove me to do so, because we do argue that this case is similar to Subhan, the court's decision in Subhan, where we should exercise due diligence. We made two inquiries with regard to the son's citizenship application by fax, and we have fax confirmation of those. We made one recently on November 20th of 06, and then one on February 5th, 07.
But the only record before the agency in the father's case, your present client's
yes.
case, is that the citizenship application of the son had been denied for poor moral character based on the statement he submitted to Senator Durbin.
Your Honor,
so
that's an interesting
state of the record.
That's an interesting point, because we did affirmatively state that the application had been delayed because of a previous denial. And I say that's interesting because the government is going to tell you there's two issues why this case fails. And the first issue is that the IJ was correct in denying a continuance. And the second issue is that the government is right in requiring individuals, or the government is correct in deporting individuals like my client, because he's a Muslim over the age of 16 and was subject to register. But with regard to the first issue, yes, CIS denied the son's application because he has a minor misdemeanor assault charge, which the record does indicate that he was denied, not for statutory reasons, because he was denied based on the 5-year, which is a common denial, the moral character issue, where he's free to reapply within the statutory time period, which he did. And we have evidence of that. The letters of support from Senator Durbin and many others were submitted to support our position that he is not only statutorily eligible, but he exemplifies good moral character and that he should be given a favorable exercise of discretion. That's his only blemish on his record whatsoever.
But is all this information outside the record at this point? What was before the agency was this material from the walk-in form that he presented to Senator Durbin, in which he reports that his citizenship application had been denied on moral character grounds.
Right.
And so that takes it outside of Subhan. And then I have a secondary question about Subhan.
Well, with regard to the conviction, the record should only indicate that the BIA discusses the fact that he may never be eligible for a visa. And that's simply incorrect. The BIA clearly erred because he is statutorily eligible. It opens the door for that discussion, Your Honor, so I'm happy to discuss that because the BIA says incorrectly that he's not eligible for a visa.
Well, he isn't unless his son acquires citizenship. So that's my secondary question, which is that this case is at least once, if not twice, removed from Subhan. And the other cases along the lines of Subhan, Ben Slimani and others in this circuit, it wasn't your client's own application to adjust status that was filed and then pending and awaiting favorable action that created the issue in Subhan. It's once removed. I mean, your client can't even file to adjust status unless and until his son acquires citizenship, and the record was that he had been turned down, and so we're at least once removed, if not more.
Judge Sykes, I would agree that it is once removed, but we are still talking about apples and oranges. We are talking about Subhan with the arguably tenuous labor application versus a family-based application. This case, this factual scenario, is virtually identical to the BIA precedent case of Velarde Pancheo, where you have a visa petition which is not even filed, and the BIA is saying you don't even have to file that visa petition. The family relationship would be grounds to grant relief. In that case, it was grounds for a motion to reopen. But nationwide, you see the immigration judges using Velarde as a basis to grant a continuance. Now, the only difference between Velarde and my client's case is that my client is obviously not married to his son. There's a different familial relationship, but it's an immediate visa category. So it's identical in that respect. The Velarde case is identical with our case in regard that you have an immediate visa available if a petition is filed. In Velarde, there was no petition filed, and the BIA still discuss the importance of balancing law enforcement interests with family unity, and that's what we have here.
But the family relationship is only going to make him eligible to seek adjustment of status if the son becomes a citizen.
So we still are once removed.
Even that BIA case.
We still are once removed, but we do see that there are issues being decided with regard to that makeup. In Subhan, in Merchant, for example, the case out of the 11th Circuit, now obviously it's not a decision within this circuit, although Judge Cudahy was sitting on the panel that day. When I argued that case, Judge Anderson said to me, in a wonderful Southern accent, and I really can't do justice with my Midwestern Chicago accent, but he says, rhetorically, he says, "Do you mean to tell me that the same agency that's attempting to remove your client is also the same agency that's giving him a benefit?" And this is the situation that we're dealing with here. My client is suffering long delays, not because of the criminal issue. The fact of the matter is he's a Muslim male over the age of 16, so he's subject to these background checks. So the other three sons who have no criminal record will also be subject to these same delays. And the normal processing time is much shorter today. We're looking at 5 to 12 months for a naturalization application here in the Chicago area for an individual that doesn't have a criminal record. If there's a criminal record, it may go beyond that, but I see my time is running out.
Ran out.
Yes. Thank you, Judge. If there's no further questions, I'll resume whatever time left I have on rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Kando.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mary Jane Kando, representing the respondent, the United States Attorney General. The sole issue before the Court today is whether the Board and the immigration judge abused their discretion in denying the request for a continuance. As petitioner has conceded, the naturalization application had been denied. And not only there is the evidence in the record, and that's what was before the immigration judge and the Board, the evidence that the petitioner himself put in, the Senator Durbin inquiry form, admitting that his application had been denied, and that was the sole basis for a continuance. As Your Honor said, this is not a subhan type of case. He has nothing. They went ahead and filed an I-130 petition of the son for the father, the petitioner in this case, but it's a nullity because the son is still a lawful permanent resident. The fact is, counsel represented this petitioner before the immigration judge, and in 2003, counsel told the immigration judge that the naturalization application should be adjudicated within days. Well, the judge, in fact, gave the petitioner in this case almost 2 years of continuances. This petitioner has been in the United States since 1996, when he came as a visitor and was allowed to stay for 6 months. He's been here illegally since that time, since 6 months after he arrived here. Now, I spoke yesterday and today with local counsel for Citizenship and Immigration Services, and I asked her to look into the son's naturalization application. And what she told me was that, consistent with what the record says, the first application, the one that was pending and that the judge granted two continuances for, was denied on November 19th, 2004. The petitioner's son had three arrests for battery in 1997. But in fact, what she informed me is the reason it was denied, it was for lack of prosecution. He was required by the service to put in the arrest records and whatever information there was about those arrests to find out if it made him ineligible to naturalize. He never submitted those documents. Then it was denied, and the petitioner appealed, and then he abandoned his appeal. So counsel said he's representing both the sons, apparently there are three sons, according to his representation, and the petitioner in this case, and they don't seem to be, I don't know what the problem is with this naturalization of the sons, but the question was, on the record, was there an abuse of discretion to deny a continuance? And there wasn't. The judge stated, and the board repeated, there is no chance right now and no reasonable likelihood that he's going to be able to adjust his status because the naturalization application was denied. In this case, the counsel has said there's a new application pending and maybe all three sons have applied to naturalize and all that sort of thing. What I would say to that, first of all, that's not relevant to the court's decision in this case. However, the court may be aware that the DHS counsel in the last couple years have a new policy about how to exercise their prosecutorial discretion. And what happens where there's an immediate relative visa approved, that would be assuming one of his sons naturalized and he filed the I-130 visa petition and it was approved, if they take that to local counsel, and it's in their discretion, but generally speaking, they'll join in a motion to reopen at the board. Obviously, at this point, a motion to reopen would be out of time if it was just filed by the petitioner. But if it's joined by the service, then the board will reopen the case. I'm not making any representations necessarily that the service would join. What I'm saying is the service has this policy of doing this because of the family relationships and the family unity type of considerations. So the petitioner isn't out in the cold in this case. One other issue I wanted to touch on, in case there are any questions, was the jurisdictional question about the court's jurisdiction to review the denial of the continuance because it's a discretionary decision. It's my understanding of the court's cases, and particularly Supon was the first case, the court discussed two different jurisdictional theories about whether the court can review these discretionary decisions and actually did not reach the issue. The court said in Supon, they discussed the two theories and then said, supposing, therefore, though, without having to decide that the statute generally bars judicial review of a continuance, et cetera. So it's our understanding that the court hasn't reached that decision. It's the government's position, and it's in a footnote on page 8 of the government's brief, that the court does have jurisdiction. And I can talk about that a little bit more if you're interested, or I could put in a supplemental pleading.
It's the government's position that this court does have jurisdiction to review a discretionary denial of a continuance?
Yes, Your Honor. The theory...
That's a little counterintuitive.
Right. The government in the past has argued that the court did not have jurisdiction, that the jurisdictional barring section was broad language. It's 1252A2B is the part of the jurisdictional provision that bars jurisdiction over discretionary decisions. Now, the first subpart of that specifies certain types of decisions that are in the statute, discretionary cancellation of removal and certain things. The second part of it says any other discretionary, any other decision or action of the Attorney General, the authority for which is specified under this subchapter to be in the discretion of the Attorney General, and then it accepts asylum decisions from that. In the past, what the government had argued was that is broad enough to cover any discretionary decision of the immigration judges. The government has reconsidered that position, and our position at this point is that because of the language in here, the authority for which is specified under this subchapter, because that language is so specific, our position is that it applies only to statutory grants of discretion, not to regulatory grants of discretion. So the authority to grant a continuance is in the regulations. That derives from the statute, which says the immigration judges can conduct removal proceedings. But because it doesn't specifically provide for that particular exercise of discretion in the statute, and because this language is so specific, it's our position that the court can review.
And this is a position the government is taking across the country, I take it?
Yes, Your Honor. I think, as you know, we had argued the opposite, but there are five courts of appeals that have found to the contrary of our former argument. The 10th and 8th circuits have found that they lack jurisdiction over continuance denials. And my understanding of this court's law is that the court hasn't specifically reached the issue yet.
Well, there are cases subsequent to Subhan that have similarly assumed that continuance decisions are discretionary and non-reviewable. So if this is the first case in which the government's new position is being advocated, I think we might want some sort of supplemental on that.
I'd be happy to do that, Your Honor. I have a...
do that within 10 days?
Yes. I can have it by the end of next week at the latest. I have a pleading that we filed. The First Circuit had found it lacked jurisdiction over continuance denials, and my office filed. We joined in the petitioner's rehearing petition, advised the court that we had changed our position on this matter. And I have that, and essentially I'll just have to change the caption. I could have it in midweek at the latest, and I'd be happy to do that.
That basically makes Subhan irrelevant, right? Because that was based on the the assumption that
right.
we wouldn't have authority to review.
Yes.
So all of this, everybody tying themselves in knots over whether a case is or isn't within subhand is irrelevant
yes.
if we were to go along with the government's new position.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which there's a circuit split on, is it basically what you're telling us?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and those, I have
supplementals
all,
on that.
I have all the cases on that and the explanation, and I'll have that in by midweek. But I'll just point out, even assuming that subhand stands for the proposition that the court lacks jurisdiction, well, my answer to that would be, in this case, if the court makes that finding, then the court lacks jurisdiction over this question because this doesn't fall within the subhand exception. It's, as Your Honor pointed out, it's at least two steps separated, and it just doesn't fall within that, unless there are any further questions.
I just have one question. Let's assume that this petition is denied, and now he goes back to Pakistan, and one, two, or three of his sons become United States citizens. How can he get back here? What happens?
The board looked at that, and they dropped a footnote in their decision pointing out, well, what they said is it's up to the consular office to determine whether a waiver of his illegal presence is available. But frankly, that waiver, the statutory waiver, he's been here illegally for 11 years.
Yeah, but he also hasn't apparently been in any trouble in 11 years.
Right, absolutely. So there are no
three sons of American citizens.
Well,
and that's hypothetical.
He has three sons who are lawful permanent residents.
Yeah, but my question was, assume that they become, one, two, or three of them become American citizens. They want to get their father back here, and he's been here a long time without any problem.
Without smuggling him.
How much?
Pardon?
They want to get him back without smuggling him in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, frankly, I think the short answer to that is, Your Honor, he's going to have to wait 10 years. That's what, I mean, that's what the Congress
64
put.
64 now.
Pardon?
He's 64 now.
He's
still going to be a lot younger than Judge Bauer.
That's true. He'll be a young man, be able to prance out here and take over the world.
A lot of good living left after that, Your Honor. I think it would be a 10-year bar, and, I mean, that's what Congress set for people who have been in this country illegally. And, by the way, under the adjustment of status, even if he doesn't leave the country, under 1255C, he still needs a waiver because people who come and overstay their legal presence still need a waiver to stay in this country and adjust here. And unlike in subhand, this petitioner is not grandfathered under 245I because there hasn't been any proper visa petition filed at all, and it would have had to have been filed before 2001. Thank you very much.
You know, we can give you another minute here. We took a lot of questions about off-the-record things.
I will defer my discussion of the equal protection issue and defer to the brief, and I'll also defer to my quote or the quote with regard to Judge Cuevas about Judge Posner, which I was ready to discuss. But I just want to, again, open the door, since I do know that this court does have the influence with settlement discussions, and if the government attorney who has discussed the issue of settlement here and a motion to reopen if the visas are approved or the citizenship is approved, I would be happy to do that and engage in settlement discussions. I would welcome it. In fact, the government attorney seems to have more access to the INS than I do, and I've only made two written fax inquiries that have been, you know, answered on deaf ears. The government obviously can pick up the phone and call to find out the status, something that I can't do. So if that does result in a naturalization, I would make a request on all parties to try to resolve these things, this issue amicably, to allow this man to stay here.
Okay. Well, then we'll look for your submission in 10 days. Thank you. The case is taken under advisement. We'll be in recess until tomorrow.